Hey everybody, Max back here again. Our wonderful interview series continues, talking to the most interesting people in the world. We have one of those on the other line. His name's Jim Davidson. He has just put a book out called The Next Everest, Surviving the Mountain's Deadliest Day and Finding the Resilience to Climb Again. Jim, it is kind of an honor to talk to somebody who has been at basically the top of the world.
You're very kind, Max. I'm just glad to be with you today.
Yeah, what's it like up there? I mean, if you could, is there any other experience that rivals it, or is that as breathtaking as I think it is?
I've been dreaming of it my whole life. By the time I got there, I'd been a climber for 35 years, and it was as magical as I've been dreaming for the past 3.5 decades. The sun started coming up over the plains of Tibet. The stars started fading away from a dark sky to a blue sky, and finally just all these mountains lit up for hundreds of miles in each direction away from us. It was truly a magical moment.
That sounds pretty impressive. I got a little bit of just the start of some goose pimples just having you talk about it. But we're here to talk about kind of your experience, not at the top of the mountain, but with the mountain in general. It's kind of amazing that people don't know more about this. It is somewhat of a mythical thing, but there's a lot of rumors, there's a lot of mistruths, there's a lot of things that are going on in the mountain and have for the past however many years that just simply aren't true.
That's true. That was part of the reason I wrote this book, The Next Everest, because I've been a climber for 3 or 4 decades. I'm an environmental geologist, and I came back from Nepal on my first trip there in 2015, and people said things like, the mountain's covered with trash. The climbers don't care about the environment. They just throw their trash on the ground and walk away. And I thought, that's not what I saw. That doesn't make any sense for people like me who love the mountain and love nature. So that was part of what I put in the book, was the reality of what it's like on Mount Everest these days.
The book's called The Next Everest, Surviving the Mountain's Deadliest Day and Finding the Resilience to Climb Again. He's Jim Davidson. He's a mountain climber. He's an environmental geologist. You can grab him wherever you get your books. Jim, that day, if we can go back to that day that kind of put it in focus for you. You were on the mountain in Camp 1. It was 2015. You got hit by a 7.8 magnitude earthquake. 18 people lost their lives, 9,000 across Nepal and neighboring countries. First of all, before you go into that, Jim, what was it like? Was the moment, where were you at when that moment hit?
Well, you know, I've been getting ready for the mountain for over 3 decades, like I said, and we had finally left base camp at 17,500 feet. We had reached camp 1 at just a little under 20,000 feet. We were kind of resting in our tents because we climb all night and we rest during the day. And at 11:56 a.m., Nepal Standard Time, we started to hear a rumble of an avalanche off one slope. That didn't scare us too much because you hear them almost every day on Everest. But then a second one started on the other slope next to us. And this one was coming down 6,000 vertical feet. We could hardly hear over the noise. And then the glacier we were camped on lifted our tent into the air about 8 inches, dropped it back down, and then lifted it again. And being in that tent was like being on a life raft on the ocean with the waves going underneath us. And that's when I knew it was a huge, huge earthquake.
Wow. Wow. So the actual earth that you were standing on was undulating like a wave in the sea.
Absolutely. I reached for the tent zipper to open the door to let my teammate and myself out because I knew with the avalanches, we didn't want to be in the tent when they arrived because the tent itself will act like a sail or a sea anchor and drag us under. So I reached for the zipper and I missed by about a foot because that's when the tent shot up into the air. And I was like, what is going on? We looked at each other in shock. And then as the tent began to rise and fall more rapidly, that's when I knew it was an earthquake and it had to be absolutely enormous.
Jim, you don't have to answer this question, but did your life flash before your eyes, or did you have that moment, that stereotypical moment, where you thought you might not be of this earth much longer?
Yeah, I thought we weren't going to last very long at all. I've been a climber, and I've helped out on rescues and been in some tough situations. So my life didn't actually flash before my eyes, but I thought we're probably all going to be dead in the next minute because there's avalanches coming from both sides. This is an enormous earthquake. What I was trying to do in that moment was what I've learned from previous tough situations was do every minor thing I could to enhance my safety and the safety of people around me. So I turned on my avalanche beacon, which is an electronic transceiver that we use here in the Colorado mountains in case you get buried by snow. Figured that might give me a little bit more chance of surviving and hopefully finding my teammates if I happen to wind up on top and they get buried. So you just do what you can to improve your chances and those of everyone around you.
That is an interesting perspective. Very neat to hear it kind of firsthand. But just in time for the 100th anniversary since the first climbers ascended Mount Everest, it's your book, Jim. It's The Next Everest. You can get it at Amazon.com. Was that moment the one that kind of gave you a real appreciation for the mountain, for Mother Nature, and, you know, kind of the awe and majesty of it?
Yes. I mean, I'm a geologist by training, like I said, long-term climber. So I had great respect for the mountain before I got there. I understood how the mountain forms by the continents moving. But to actually be on Mount Everest when the biggest earthquake in 81 years hits, it just brings it home how grand the earth is and how huge, and frankly, how minuscule people like myself are, that we can just get flicked off the mountain like a little bug in an instant. And you realize we're just lucky to still be here and to have a chance to see such grand places, and sometimes to escape them from the mountain, including that deadliest day ever in 2015.
That is amazing. And how did it end up, Jim? How did you, I don't want to say escape, but how did you manage your way through the rest of that day after that moment?
Yeah, escape's not a bad word, actually. We were trapped there. We wanted to get down to the base of the mountain where there had been a different avalanche with rocks, and sadly, scores and scores of people have been injured. 18 people were killed in base camp. That's what made it the deadliest day ever. We wanted to get down there and help out our community, but we couldn't because our route back through the dangerous collapsing icefall section of the glacier had also been wiped out by yet another avalanche. And so we were trapped up there at Camp 1 at nearly 20,000 feet for 2 days. There's some limited helicopter usage, and they moved all the wounded people out to the nearest medical post. 2 days later, they were able to take us down in groups of two by two down to base camp, and that's how we were able to get off the mountain about 48 hours after the quake hit.
How big was your sigh of relief, sir? I just breathed one for you, I felt like.
Yeah, I was breathing it too. We were trapped there for 2 days, and I knew as a geologist there'd be more aftershocks and more avalanches, and indeed there were. So as soon as I stepped off that helicopter in base camp, I was so glad to be there. But that sigh of relief didn't hold for very long, because I had just stepped out of one tough situation to an even worse one, which is the base camp disaster where people had been killed and injured. So I immediately got involved in a group that was trying to dig through avalanche rubble, rocks, and dirt with our hands and shovels to try and recover medical equipment to be used on wounded people. I also got involved in trying to recover some of the dead bodies and sent them back around the world, and then later trying to fundraise for Nepal to help start the rebuilding. So we kind of went from one situation to the next, and that's where I learned some tough lessons about trying to be resilient even when you're overwhelmed and to keep facing uncertainty, and that's what I shared in the book, The Next Everest, was how to face those uncertainties and keep being resilient in the face of your own fears.
He's Jim Davidson, the critically acclaimed mountain climber, environmental geologist, now author. The Next Everest is available wherever you grab your books. And Jim, it sounds like even in moments of tragedy like that, the climbing community is one that holds Everest and other places they go in a lot of reverence and in a lot of respect. So when it comes to things you hear about overcrowding on the mountain or base camp just being an absolute smorgasbord of trash and just disrespect, that doesn't seem true talking to you, Jim. And if you could clarify that, where do the myths come from and why do you paint a different picture of all that?
Yeah, that's an insightful question, and thanks for bringing it up. Yes, I speak as a public speaker to corporations and universities and whatnot, and so I do a lot of public speaking, and people will say those things that you just said. Hey, I've heard the mountain's covered with trash. There's even photographs of it out there. Those photos are real. There are old trash piles that have been found on the mountain, and basically what happened is over the course of the first 50 years that humans went there, frankly, nobody had environmental ethics. We all just kind of threw our trash on the ground until the 70s. Things have gotten a lot better. Certainly people that love the wilderness like myself, we try and raise ourselves to a higher standard called leave no trace. So some of those old messes are real. There have been about 35 expeditions that have cleaned up some of those old messes. Certainly we don't throw our trash on the ground like that anymore, like our ancestors and our great-great-grandparents used to. We've all learned better. So, you know, there's still some messes on Everest, but not nearly as some of those photographs you may have seen or those stories that get repeated, like the mountain's covered in human waste, the mountain's covered in trash. It's not. There are some places we need to clean up, just like here in Colorado. Most of it's beautiful, but there's some places that still need to be cleaned up, and that's part of our work going forward is to keep doing that work to improve the mountain.
Jim, that sounds like a good metaphor for the world. sir.
Yeah, yes, we've all learned some habits the hard way. We had some bad habits then. We're always trying to improve, and that's what really what we're all trying to do in life, is to try and lift each other up and do a little bit better later on.
In light of those comments, though, Jim, with your book marking the 100th anniversary since the first climbers ascended Mount Everest, do you think that Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay thought or even would imagine that Everest would be what it was? I mean, what it is today, I wouldn't imagine either. I'd imagine they thought they would never see, say, a rope they left behind, or maybe a boot, or some piece of clothing or something like that. They would probably never imagine. Who knew that there would be so many people after them? And your thoughts on that, sir?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, think about the first person that not only went to Mount Everest, but the first person that went to Miami Beach and looked out at that. Could they have ever imagined? The first person that ever went to Hawaii and stood on Waikiki and looked at all that beautiful water and sand. It's hard to imagine that there'll ever be that many people out of place, including Mount Everest. But I think there's also a lesson there, which is when we go to a new place, we have to start thinking about how are we going to manage this with so many humans? How are we going to keep taking care of the environment as best we can? Because we can look over our shoulder and see how places that were once pristine get harmed by humans. And it's our responsibility to do it as best we can to protect the environment as well as the people.
That's a great perspective, Jim, an absolutely wonderful one. One you touch on in the book, it's called... it's brand new. It's called the Next Everest, Surviving the Mountain's Deadliest Day, Finding the Resilience to Climb Again. It's on Amazon.com. Jim, you can kind of talk about Everest as a microcosm for more of the world, but it's also a really interesting place, a really unique place, one that actually, you know, one that caught my eye in kind of going through the information before we talked to you. You actually... came down the mountain a little bit heftier than you went up when you made that climb in 2017.
Well, you're being very kind saying hefty. I guess you could say fatter would be the word I would use, because even though I lost a lot of weight on the mountain, what I lost was muscle, not fat. And so as a result, my body fat went from about 12 or 13% up to 18%, because it is so difficult up there with the low oxygen levels that muscle just strips away. And I lost 2 pounds of fat and 20 pounds of muscle. So, yes, I was fatter percentage-wise when I came off the mountain than when I went up.
Oh, man. Jim, the book sounds like one heck of a read. I'm going to pick up a copy. Everybody else should at Amazon.com. One last question before I let you go. How enjoyable was the experience writing it and talking about these thoughts and these experiences you've had and then putting them on paper?
Well, it's a lot of hard work, certainly being a writer, but I really wanted to let people know what it feels like to be on the mountain, what I saw there, what it was like to survive that earthquake. So those things were kind of tough. But writing up the moments of when I saw climbers helping each other out, when I got to walk that summit ridge at 29,000 feet and watch the sun come over, up over the plains of Tibet, those are really beautiful moments, and it was fun to relive them and, you know, try and share those with the readers.
You can at... wherever you grab books, The Next Everest, it's Surviving the Mountain's Deadliest Day, Finding the Resilience to Climb Again. A lot of great stuff in there. It's action-packed. Jim Davidson's the author. Jim, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. It's a great thing to talk to amazing people, and you're certainly one of those.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being with you. Take care.